This episode sponsored by Apollo Neuro.
Having problems getting a good night's sleep? Apollo Neuro may be the help your body needs. Apollo Neuro is a wearable designed to calm your nervous system so you can fall asleep faster and sleep deeper without medication or side effects. It works by sending gentle, silent vibrations through your wrist that signal safety to your body, like a hug for your nervous system. The result? Fewer wake-ups, deeper sleep, and mornings where you actually feel rested. It's not just a sleep tracker. Apollo actively helps you regulate your body, and Smart Vibes AI automatically personalizes the experience for sleep, calm, focus, and recovery. It's scientifically backed, with clinical trial participants gaining up to 60 minutes of sleep a night. Try it risk-free for 30 days. Visit apolloneuro.com/audio and take $99 off today.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we're into John 11 of A Storm of Swords, and I see that you've removed Roman numerals from the dock. Thank you.
I didn't mean to do that, but I just did because I was kind of piecing together the fly because I accidentally forgot to, I don't know if I did it correctly or not. Some of it I didn't even do. I got to fix it.
Well, hopefully it's John 11. Hopefully
it is John 11, but it's because Jimmy, we were also recording our Patreon episode, which we usually do back to back here, where we have officially started our Game of Thrones rewatch. And so we just did that. And we talked about Game of Thrones episode one, man, what a time. I actually saw some more people join over on Patreon. So that's super cool. Cause I'm sure they're excited for that. So I'll have that out as well, but God, what a freaking time capsule.
Yeah, I always undervalue just how much the show gets me hyped. It's kind of like Dunkin' Egg or House of the Dragon. I see the trailers, and don't get me wrong, I get excited, but I'm always pretty calm. And then that first intro hits, and I'm like, oh, yeah, this is like part of who I am.
Yeah, we're just back into it. I know. It's great.
It feels good.
So if you want to check that out, that is should be up now as you're listening to this. So otherwise, Jimmy, how you been? How you doing?
Doing good, man. Just hanging out. Work kind of finally slowed down. It's the calm before the storm, unfortunately, but it's been good. It's been grand, as the Irish say. How about you? Doing good?
I'm doing good, man. You know, you and I were talking a little bit about this, so I wanted to bring it up. We were talking about Emmys, Dunkin' Egg, and... Man, is anything finish the pit? Is anything gonna beat it? I don't know, man.
No.
I still stand by this. If House of the Dragon is a true return to season 3, season 4 of Game of Thrones, which I'm not saying it is, it's gonna be. But if it is, I think that's the only thing that actually stands a chance.
I think it's
season two, season 2 of the pit is like phenomenal. So I mean, it has to be like legit Game of Thrones season 3, season 4 tier to even compete.
Yeah, and I know there's a lot of people who have lost like faith in Condell and the show, but the source, like what they're adapting, which I know there's a lot to fill in there. I think a lot of what was left off the table in 2 is going to come in 3, and some really cool stuff that even beyond that. I think it could be amazing. I think it'd be season 3, 4, probably not, but it could be.
Just remember in season 2 of House of the Dragon, the highest rated episode in like all of Westeros, I mean, not anymore, but was from there, the Rhaenys battle.
Dude, that episode was dope.
It's so good, dude. So he is capable of it, and I actually do think if you go back and rewatch season 2 of House of the Dragon with the context in your mind of like, oh, the budget is what they had to kind of figure out at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can see that. I mean, it's, you know, I still hard because of him and George and what the fallout is, and we don't know, and we know George can also be a little picky about things. So it's really hard to tell exactly. But even when you look at the interviews from like intermediate people like Casey Bloys, who's like the head of HBO, he seems to be kind of like, you know, even he didn't back George up 100% to, you know, to say, oh, like Ryan's terrible. I mean, it's just like, well, you know, he's like, sometimes it's just authors are pretty protective of their work, but that doesn't mean we can make everything happen.
Yeah. I mean, there are,
he's even it. And even Casey Bloys, who's the, I think they're pronouncing that right. But anyway, even he's in the middle of freaking David Zaslav, who, by the way, is about to leave the company with like $500 million check. So, all right.
Great. Good for him. Good for him. Good every for time him, we, guess. Every time we dunk Zaslav, there's always a commenter. It's like, actually, David's amazing.
Which is wild.
I mean, that's fine. They can have their
it might be him. Maybe David Zaslav listens to us.
Big fan of the show. Yeah. Davey Z, as we call him. Yeah, dude, I think House of the Dragon, I think what I would say is the ceiling is really high. And I think that there are a lot of people, and maybe this is not the case, but I have a hunch that there's a decent amount of people that watch Dunk and Egg that did not watch House of the Dragon season 1 and 2. Sure. Because, I mean, I don't know what the ratings are comparatively between House of the Dragon and Dunk and Egg, but Dunk and Egg was, at least at the beginning, beating The Pit in viewers, which is nuts. Also, it's very good for us in Westeros, by the way, because if it's doing numbers, we're going to get more. So it's good.
Exactly. But anyway, if you haven't seen it yet, go watch The Pit. It's peak.
Yeah, it's television.
It's, season two. It's so good.
Yeah, we were done with season two, and Mrs. Nuts was like, there's no more? I was like, yeah. And she's like, I'm so sad. I'm like, it's only going to take 9 months to get the next season, maybe a year.
The only thing I want to say about The Pit is just real quick, is that I think the Dr. Langdon stuff is freaking ridiculous. The fact that we live in a country in which a doctor can't skim benzos. I mean, are we becoming a communist country? Okay. I mean, if the fry cook at McDonald's can skim some fries, which you know he is, why can't a doctor skim some benzos? I mean, what's the big deal?
Just skimming a little off the top.
I mean, come on.
Couple for you, couple for me. I mean, hey, when I used to work at a truck stop, we had fresh scoop ice cream. And I'll be damned if, you know, midnight shift, no one's in there. I didn't take a plastic spoon and get one scoop.
Yeah.
And I never use a spoon, to be clear.
Doctors should be allowed to do that.
Yeah, right? We had like 12 flavors. I would try all of them. And
I thought rank doctors them. Without borders, right? Now suddenly you got all these rules. What's all that about? Gee, many Christmas.
Thought this was a mech.
Anyway, great show. Love it.
Yeah, it's incredible, dude.
Okay, there's really not a whole lot of Song of Ice and Fire news. George is still like MIA.
He's MIA and
any of his posting. So we're just going to go right into the chapter today, which is
a
short one. By the way,
is this short, Pat? Is it a short chapter?
Maybe some of these chapters are all just average length, and I'm just like, but it's just like the big ones feel. Just wait till we get to Dance of Dragons, because then it's like all the chapters are massive. Yeah, like all the chapters comparatively are just freaking.
I'm immune to long chapters because Malazan has like multiple chapters that are over 100 pages long, so I'm used to it.
Isn't the final battle in Wheel of Time like?
Oh yeah, it's like 200 pages.
It's like half the book or something. Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. And a lot of brain tugging.
All right, here we go. Anyway, let's dive in to today's chapter, which is John 11. So John is training in the yard when Melisandre arrives to take him before Stannis. The king does not believe John is a traitor, for he knew Janna Slint as well as Ned Stark. Stannis knew Ned to be a man of honor and trust John, saying it was John who found the dragonglass dagger that Sam used to kill the other, and John who brought them the Horn of Winter and captured Mance's son. At every step of Stannis' speech, John clarifies whom he credits with doing the actual deeds. Stannis asks John if there is honor in Mance Rayder, and the young man claims there is. The king speaks of the war that Melisandre has seen in her flames, and he confides that John may have a part in the upcoming battle. Stannis offers to legitimize Jon and name him Lord of Winterfell, a goal he considers especially important due to all the strife occurring in the north. Stannis intends to let the wildlings through the wall and settle them in the gift. They should they pledge fealty and accept the Lord of Light as their god. He also presumes to marry his loyal Lord of Winterfell to Val and solidify his peace with the wildlings. However, Jon would have to adopt Stannis's faith and burn the god's wood of Winterfell. Jon asks him for time to consider the offer, and Stannis agrees.
Man, what an extreme thing to say.
Right.
Like, burn that godswood while you're at it. Dude, that's like, that's pretty aggressive, in my opinion.
It's actually something you kind of forget about because, I mean, it's such a small little piece of the story. But yeah, when you think about it, it's like, no, Melisandre's actually like, yeah, let's get rid of this weirwood tree.
It's pretty significant.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a piece of the story I forget about, like, because you think about all the other stuff that's going on. But I mean, she clearly sees people in the flames and all of the stuff. She tells John, you know, he who must not be named, when she's talking about the other. We should look that up. Did this come out before Harry Potter or after?
After. Before. Oh, no, before
a Storm of Swords.
Oh, you know what? Storm of Swords, what, 2004? 2003.
Storm of Swords released 2000.
Yeah, so it beats Harry Potter, right?
Harry Potter. We'll use Philosopher's Stone.
To be fair, J.K. Rowling ripped off most of her story from Neil Gaiman.
Oh! 2001.
Yep. I knew it.
Yeah, get that out of here.
More like Harry Dummy, am I right?
Oh, wait, is that the movie or is that the book? Nope. Wait, the book was 2000. The movie was 2001. Oh, no. Are we about to look stupid?
Are we cooked?
1997 novel. That's what I
thought. Oh, you hate to see it. You hate to see it. Yeah, but that was written on a napkin. Screw her.
Well, does she say that? I don't think that's like the first time she ever talks about the old god. So, well.
Yeah, it's tough. That's a tough look. Tough.
We lost that one.
Yeah, we, you know, take the L.
George might have copied that one.
I have a feeling George R. Martin did not read Harry Potter.
I had to take a guess, maybe. I mean, that was kind of a big. Harry Potter was, the first few books were big, but it didn't become like mega hit it was until the movies.
It was really big in school. It was like the Scholastic Book Fair like prize winner. You know what I mean? It was like if you were in school, they were trying to sell it to you for sure. Right.
I certainly wasn't allowed to read it because it was witchcraft.
That was a big push at my church as well, but I did.
Jimmy and I are from, you know, West Virginia and Ohio, so yeah, get that witchcraft out of there.
Yeah, and the satanic panic was very real still. I remember my youth pastor ripping up my Squirtle Pokemon card. Jeez. I brought it to church and he ripped it up. They said, that Pokemon right there is the devil.
Have you ever seen that meme? It's not a meme video. It's like some actual guy talking about it.
Yes, like the 90s, I have.
Like kind of chubby guy with like long hair. Yeah. Ridiculous.
I that might have been the video they played. I remember they had an emergency Wednesday night service and it was about Harry Potter and Pokemon.
Yeah.
And it was just like, you know, there's 666 on Pikachu's tail.
Oh, jeez.
Man, what, imagine if they would have read Game of Thrones. They would have lost their minds.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all you're talking about there's only one Lord of Light. Okay. Jeez. I'm not making fun of Christianity. I am a Christian, but if you grew up in the Appalachia area in the 90s, yeah, and then backwoods churches, they were real.
I was Pentecostal. Yeah. Do you see this beautiful cat behind me, by the way?
Yeah, there you go.
She's so mean.
Is that the one that takes medication?
We're trying to get medication to calm her down. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
She's brutal.
We're talking about Jon Snow. Here we go.
Oh, yeah. Jon Snow and Val.
And Val, here we go, by the way. Let's pull up some of the stuff from the chapter here. So Melisandre, this is about like one or two paragraphs in. So we shall await you atop the wall, said Melisandre. This is after she comes to get John. We, John heard, not he, is as they say. This is his true queen, not the one he left in Eastwatch. What do you think she's doing over there in Eastwatch?
It's a good question. Maybe summoning the Night King. I don't know.
I mean, just over there, just brooding, I guess. Anyway, it says, then you continue a little bit. So Melisandre was waiting for him at the base of the wall. She had sent her queen's men away. What does his grace want of me? John asked her as they entered the cage. All you have to give, Jon Snow. He is a king. He shut the door and pulled the bell cord. The winch began to turn. They rose. The day was bright and the wall was weeping. Long fingers of water trickling down its face and glinting in the sun. In the close confines of the iron cage, he was acutely aware of the Red Woman's presence. She even smells red. The scent reminded him of Mickon's Forge, of the way iron smelled when red hot, the scent of smoke and blood. Kissed by fire, he thought, remembering Ygritte. The wind got in amongst Melisandre's long red robes and sent them flapping against John's leg as he stood beside her. You're not cold, my lady? He asked. She laughed. Never. The ruby at her throat seemed to pulse, in time with the beating of her heart. The Lord's fire lives within me, Jon Snow. Feel. She put her hand on his cheek and held it there while he felt how warm she was. This is how life should feel, she told him. Only death is cold.
Damn.
Just a masterclass of writing by George once again.
Melisandre, I mean, it's like a great character.
Storm of Swords is like George R. Martin's like Michael Jordan run in the 90s. I mean, it's just like complete dominance.
Matt, you're from Ohio. Let's say it's like 3-1 LeBron comeback.
Same thing. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's just complete. I mean, it's just so ridiculously good.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I love Melisandre as a character. Anytime she's on the page, interesting things are happening, at least in my opinion. And I think that the sensory details here are pretty interesting. One, George is really good at writing those, like being able to smell the things. But also, I got a little bit of like, oh, well, smoke. Like smoke and salt.
Mm-hmm. Also, this goes a long way to show you the perception of the characters. And we talk about how this is always a POV read, because every other thing we've ever seen from Melisandre has been either like the prologue or a Davos chapter, in which Davos is like, she seems like threatening and scary. Well, I guess so, except for the one Arya chapter. But like, you know, like threatening and scary, and you're like, what? You know, I mean, shadow babies and all of this stuff. But now we're getting her from John's perception, John's point of view, and you know, they just showed up and essentially saved everyone by taking out some of the wildlings and capturing. So now you're almost viewing her in like with some fondness.
Yeah. And it's just a different perspective looking at her.
Yeah.
Like that's how you write characters. That's how you write POV is, you know, two characters shouldn't really think too many of the same things about a person that they're interacting with. And it also is the whole light versus dark, warm versus cold.
Mm-hmm.
She's pretty much on the different side of the compass than Jon Snow. And I don't know. She seems pretty receptive to talking to him. Like, you don't see Melisandre just walking around talking to everybody either, which Stannis kind of draws the conclusion that Jon might have an important role to play, right? How big that role is going to be, I think, might surprise Stannis, because I think Stannis is going to be replaced.
That too. I guess it kind of leads me to a question here of perhaps Melisandre. I mean, I don't think she knows, but we know, obviously, in theory, John has King's blood.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, certainly has some King's blood. So does she? I don't think she can feel.
This episode sponsored by Apollo Neuro.
Having problems getting a good night's sleep? Apollo Neuro may be the help your body needs. Apollo Neuro is a wearable designed to calm your nervous system so you can fall asleep faster and sleep deeper without medication or side effects. It works by sending gentle, silent vibrations through your wrist that signal safety to your body, like a hug for your nervous system. The result? Fewer wake-ups, deeper sleep, and mornings where you actually feel rested. It's not just a sleep tracker. Apollo actively helps you regulate your body, and Smart Vibes AI automatically personalizes the experience for sleep, calm, focus, and recovery. It's scientifically backed, with clinical trial participants gaining up to 60 minutes of sleep a night. Try it risk-free for 30 days. Visit apolloneuro.com/audio and take $99 off today.
like the king's blood in it, but she might be able to sense there's an importance about him. There's something, and maybe that's something like how she just feels drawn specifically to people. Like, you know, obviously she knows Hendrik Storm has king's blood. So, you know, is it, I guess, is it like the Force in Star Wars where some people just like, because if king's blood, if king's blood magic is just regular magic, do some people just have like their own, like some people just are more magically in tune than other people?
Yeah, their chakras aligned or whatever.
Yeah,
I think
I think like the Force in Star Wars is a good, where some people are slightly more Force sensitive than others, who even though like they're not like full Jedi level.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's also the stuff she sees in the flames. And remember, she's interpreting these things. And while she talks with a lot of confidence about what she's seen in the flames, there's absolutely a chance she looks at Jon Snow and goes, oh, you know what? That Lord of, you know, the Azor Ahai type figure, that might have been Jon, not Stannis. Like, she might be reinterpreting, might be second guessing herself possibly even. So, I think it comes mostly from the flames, I think.
Okay. Well, let's continue on here a little bit. So there is some pretty cool stuff. So then they go up and they meet Stannis. But one of the coolest things, I love this, is when they talk a little bit about Donald Noy. Our boy. Died below in the tunnel fighting the giants. Stannis grimaced. Noy made my first sword for me and Robert's Warhammer as well. Had the gods seen fit to spare him, he would have made a better Lord Commander for your order than any of these fools who are squabbling over it now. You know, then they go on to talk a little about some of those people. But I just love the little bit of Donald Noy. Shout out there.
Oh, yeah. We're big Donald Noy fans here at Bend the Knee. And any mention of him, especially for his good deeds that definitely go underappreciated by the fandom, we love it. We love to see it.
Okay, continuing on a little bit here too. So then they start to talk about Mance Rayder and his wife, you know, and John says Dala died. He was saddened by that still. Val is her sister. She and the babe did not require much capturing, your grace. You had put the wildlings to a flight, and the skin changer Mance had left to guard the queen went mad when the eagle burned. John looked at Melisandre. Some say that's your doing. She smiled, her long copper hair tumbling across her face. The Lord of Light has fiery talons, Jon Snow. Jon nodded and turned back to the king. Your grace, you spoke of Val. She has asked to see Mance Rayder to bring his son to him. It would be a kindness. The man is a deserter from your order. Your brothers are all insisting on his death. Why should I do him a kindness? And you know, this is something I'm excited to see when we get back to this episode in the rewatch, which will be, you know, many seasons away from here.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know that they ever mention. Do they mention that Mance Rayder in the show? I'm trying to remember if it's ever really mentioned that he was a member of the Night's Watch.
I think so.
I think so. I don't think that's part of the reason they kill him.
No, I don't think they make it a big deal.
Here, it's not necessarily that he won't. That he's not going to kneel to Stannis. Like he's a deserter.
Yeah.
That's the whole reason they kill him in the show. But here it is also brought up like, well, he's going to die anyway, because technically by your laws, by the laws of the Night's Watch, he deserves to die.
Yeah. And we know Stannis. I mean, he's by the book no matter what.
Right.
There are no nuances when it comes to him.
And if he considers himself the one true king, then he also resides over the Night's Watch and would have them continue the ways they've always done. So it is just, it's a cool little, it doesn't really do much for the details, but it's just a cool little detail. Like, oh yeah, you kind of forget about that.
Yeah, definitely. And also just, I mean, we're seeing in this chapter, but the fact that Stannis does have this power, if you consider him to be the one true king. In the show, it just kind of goes by and that's in the end of Stannis and we move on. But in the books, I think it's way more focused on, and he's still alive in the books, which is a big, big deal.
And we'll talk about that a little bit here as well. So then they move on and they talk a little bit about the Lord of Bones and Rattleshirt, right? Mm-hmm. And this is something I kind of wanted to pay attention to, because it's like, this is the man they decide to, you know, do the swap ultimately with. Rattleshirt, as we called him, treacherous and bloodthirsty. If there's honor in him, he hides it down beneath his suit of bones. You know, there's other than they talk about Tormund. But it's just kind of interesting that Rattleshirt is the one they decide ultimately he's going to be. There is, he is in the show technically. You see like him, but I think he, I can't remember exactly what happened. So I think he's part of the Hard Home episode and then he dies.
I have no recollection of Rattleshirt in the show, I'm going to be honest with you. And I've always felt like in the book, I always was like, oh, okay, it's Rattleshirt. Like, it's not random necessarily, but it's not a character you expect to come to the forefront.
Yeah.
At least not me. Are you looking it up on the...
Yeah, I'm gonna pull him. I know you see him. I just can't remember exactly what the full context of it is. No, he's in multiple episodes. Yeah, you see him when they are in the party. I'll pull up a picture so you
can... I literally have to Google a picture of him because I can't remember what he looked like in the show.
But yeah, he's in Game of Thrones season 2, season 3, and then season 5. When they go to Hard Home.
What an episode.
Yeah, and Tormund kills him. Yeah.
Based.
In the show. Yeah, so totally different. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, he is certainly there. But obviously he has a much, much bigger role to play in the books. But so other than that, really the big other thing that comes out of this is that Stannis offers Jon Snow to make him Lord of Winterfell and he wants to marry him to Val.
Yeah, this is major change right in the show. But Val has always been one of the more interesting characters that gets talked about, but not highlighted very much, in my opinion.
I would actually go on record to say I think we're
the Val people.
We're the Val people. Like when I look at our Google Analytics, I mean, if you type in Val, and I've done it from other like non thing, like we almost always come up because there's a lot of people don't talk about her. It's like Craster. Like we are
the Crasters.
The people we focus on.
We're a big fan of Craster and the way he works. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, and and Val.
Val is one. Because the Val stuff was before I was here. That was with Ezra. And I honestly feel like, I mean, I have a lot of questions, but I feel like I still am yet to dive deep enough into the Val character and exactly what she's going to play. Because my opinion is, you know how some characters get combined in the TV show or like sure. They take pieces. I don't think Val is even considered in the TV show. Like whatever no. Val's ultimate purpose is in the books, I don't think is represented at all in the TV show. This is just my hunch.
She is technically not, it's not at all the same character, but the character in the Hard Home episode, I think she has like a child and she wants John to take the child with him when he's leaving.
Yeah.
And she dies, but she is like listed as Val. I think it's just like a cool Easter egg, but it's definitely not the same character, but it's just like a cool, you know, little reference Easter, whatever.
And I wonder, as many people have, if she could have an alternate identity. I don't always like going into that because it feels like that's always where people start. Like, well, this character certainly can't be who they say they are. Lord Crow is welcome to steal into my bed any night he dares. Once he's been gelded, keeping those vows will come much easier for him. Like that, she's just very seductive.
Well, and that might, and like the thing that's so interesting is that John very easily could be much more, if John dies and gets resurrected, he could in theory marry her. And then like now he is actually sort of in a way like the leader of the wildlings. Cause I think they'll just rally behind him. So some of that timing and stuff will happen. And then maybe just Val dies. Maybe the Battle of Bastards takes place afterwards and she fights alongside him. And then she dies there, which opens it to a John Danny romance. But a John Danny romance might not happen in the books.
No, I don't think it will. I mean,
I think, you know, you've been a big proponent about that. I think it's much more likely that it could. And then if the true ending like is that John does just go back with the wildlings because that's where he wants to go. And
yeah, Val could be that link.
Sure.
I'll be honest, it would make a lot more sense than what the TV show did. I mean, I was fine with him going above the wall, but like ultimately it's kind of like, okay, well, what's the point? Like,
sure, there needs to be more to it.
Yeah, and Val is also, the way she's described is one that she's pretty much stunning. Like she would turn heads in any court she was in, but also kind of a warrior princess type deal. So she could very well be fighting in the final battle. Like that, that's absolutely possible. And by the way, I think one of the reasons why I don't think John and Danny are going to get together in the books is because I remember, like, when people were talking about the ending points, that Dan and Dave said they had, in season four, they had already decided that John and Danny would get together and that John would ultimately kill her. Like, that was something they decided really early on, and George was not involved in that. Right. So, and also, here's the hard part. Here's the hard part, Matt. It is a Song of Ice and Fire. And if you take two characters to represent ice and fire, it's Danny and John. So, and right. They also have a lot of parallels in the sense that they are both trying to learn how to lead. They both get themselves in predicaments they can't seem to get out of. And they have loyalties that lie over like multiple, groups of people. So the thing is if it were to happen, I'm open to it. It's not that I'm refuting it because I hate it. It's more that I feel like it would go somewhere else. But also, at the end of the day,
I don't think Danny's going to live. I don't think Danny survives Game of Thrones. I've always thought it makes way more sense that she sacrifices herself, and I think that's a way more likely thing. But Danny, I think, would be so more just open to the idea of like not necessarily falling in love with John, but like the idea that this is like her brother, and like she finally gets to meet somebody in her family. Because even just the way she talks about Rhaegar and she thinks about some of the other people in her family, I think like that in itself could just be enough.
Yeah, and John is her nephew, right? Okay, I was making sure.
Well, her brother. Yeah,
no, you're good. It's it's not always easy to trace that family tree whenever the branches cross so much, but. I think that you can still have a Song of Ice and Fire, and like Danny and John don't have to be together. But if there's another thing I could throw in that maybe kind of points to them eventually getting together, is both of their first people that they fell in love with died.
Right. I know.
They both have two interests, right? They're on interest number two. If something happens to Val, something happens to Dario, or maybe Dario abandons Danny at some point, it turns out maybe Val does too.
Sure.
We don't know.
So, or Val could also be there at the end, and if John and Danny go down a route and then Danny dies and then he goes back with the wildlings, like, well, Val's there too, and they could just be like assumed that they get, you know, get
and they could be a throuple or whatever.
She's also not on page that much to where I think it's just like we don't really know. It's not like we get to see a ton of her, so I mean I think it's just people just think it's cool, right? It's not like
she's just a very big question mark.
She's just like a beautiful wildling.
And she does seem kind of
significant. He also already had one of those. So, I mean.
That's so true, too. But she does seem a little bit different. Like, she is, you know, Ygritte's supposed to be kind of rough looking. Her teeth are a little, you know, not as perfectly aligned, whatever. Val is considered, like, she could walk into King's Landing, into the Red Keep, and people be like, who is this?
Sure.
Which just makes it feel a little bit more significant. And also, I mean. I haven't heard any of the theories, but are there any theories about who Val is? Like who she could be?
Then you got to go down the hole. Is Mance. Because then people talk about Val might be a Targaryen.
She does have blonde hair.
Exactly. Yeah. So a lot of people think Val is a Targaryen.
Yeah. But which one?
Just like any, like she, not that.
Oh,
she,
you're saying offshoot. Okay.
Right. That she, if Mance is, because I think I don't know her exact age, but let me pull it up. We have no idea her age. Mm-mm. Right. The only thing we know is that she is Dala's sister. That's it. That's the only thing we know about her.
Yeah. Free folk woman, man of the Night's Watch, made Mance, Dala, Val, and Jarl.
Sure. Huh.
I need to look more into Jarl. That's somebody I haven't. It doesn't look like there's much just clicking on his wiki page. Right. But he is supposedly with her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he has like three lines.
Yeah, a lot of the wildlings do, which makes it really, really difficult to have any. Because, I mean, you just have like how so many of these, I think so many of these theories just get pieced together around them just by people suggesting that it could be like, you know, you're just trying to fit them into many other scenarios.
Yeah. 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 I think Val's most likely just who she says she is. I think she's just Val.
Yeah. I agree.
Warrior princess.
And then the last thing we know about her, which we'll get to eventually, is just that, you know, she's part of the Pink Letter. John demands her to come as well. Or Ramsay demands that she show up at as well.
Which, I mean, that's the whole thing. Like, how does Ramsay know about Val?
Right.
He clearly didn't write it.
Right.
The more I think it might be Stannis. I don't know, dude. The Pink Letter. Yeah.
Like Stannis writes it in order to try to trick John into doing
stuff. It could be. That's one of the coolest like theories.
Like it's so different. It's so different than the show.
Yeah, we just really don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think it's an okay place to stop with this episode. Where will we be at next time? I don't have it pulled up as well as I should have.
Let's see. John 11, Storm of Swords.
Oh yeah. Next is the
Tyrion 11.
Yeah, because we're almost done here. I mean, this is like we're talking about a peak chapter next week. Tyrion 11 is about as peak of as you can possibly get.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for next week. It's one of my favorite chapters.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, guys, with that, I want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. Our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 77, Tyrion 11.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.